Welcome to the Geekcentric Podcast, and welcome to our spoiler-filled discussion for Marvel Animation's X-Men 97.
Magneto lives!
Hello, I'm J-Law, but you can call me Justin, and welcome to our spoiler-filled discussion for Marvel Animation's X-Men 97. If you're joining us for the first time, well, we are Geekcentric, a podcast covering the world of movies, TV shows, toys, collectibles, gaming, and all things Geekcentric. Joining me for today's spoiler-filled discussion, I summon the geeks to me, my geeks. Please welcome Nate Shelton, Kevin Hudson, and Megan Chambers. How we doing, muties?
Game over, Sleazoid.
Beauties.
Kevneto lives.
There, that's better. See, we'll use that. That's the one we use. No, we're doing good. Everyone's coped after said finale. You know, there's a lot to discuss in regards to the finale and also in relation to the entire season. So we will be obviously talking about that as well. And that's actually kind of where I want to just start our pre-conversation before we get into the discussion around the finale. And that is, you know, this, we've been blessed with 10 episodes week to week. The conversation's been great online. How have you, my fellow geeks, enjoyed this week to week experience? Meg, let's start with you.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I didn't start out as a fan of X-Men 97. Obviously a big Marvel fan, but never watched the show when it was out. I was not born yet, I don't think, when it first aired. Or no, I would have been, but I guess like really
it was too young. You were too young for it. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Same with me.
And okay. So basically this style of animation also doesn't really appeal to me all the time. So when the show was announced, I was like, okay, cool. I'm not probably going to take that in. And then my husband put it on the TV, said, do you mind if we watch this? And I was like, yeah, sure, go ahead. And I was just on my phone and then slowly would look up from my phone every couple minutes and then slowly put my phone down and then got fully invested by the end of the first episode. So this was such an interesting way to take in Marvel content because I've never seen it done this way before. And also the storytelling, which I'm sure we'll all talk about throughout this, is unbelievable with this show. It's a lot more adult than I was expecting as well. So that was really fun. And there are some images that are burned in my brain forever now that I maybe wish weren't there, but that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's a great call out. You know, this was a show that was, you know, back in 92, which it was designed for kids. You know, I know Kevin and I are of the year of 85. We grew up, we watched this show. It was the Saturday morning routine to watch this show. And to see this show now, 27 years, 28 years later, it's been adultified in a way. It's grown up with Kevin and I, and or with the audience that grew up with the show. And it very much has this more mature theme to it. It still doesn't go direct with certain things, but it is implied very heavily. And I think that's one of the huge wins for this show on that level. And again, going with that week to week experience and seeing that unfold, it definitely heightens it so much more. Kev, you weren't on our spoiler free review, but I'd love to know, you know, you started the show day one. How's it been for you from week to week?
Well, I mean, I didn't actually start this show on day one.
Oh, okay.
Like you mentioned, I was an OG X-Men watcher Saturday mornings. That was my jam. I do think, though, that like I started doing stuff on weekends. Like I think by the time the show was wrapping up, I would have started playing hockey on Saturday mornings. So I never saw the end of this. I had no idea that Xavier died, quote unquote. You know, like I had no clue. And it had been obviously so long that when I started to hear some buzz about this, I was like, okay, I gotta go and revisit this thing from my childhood. So I went and did like a compulsory rewatch on like the biggest episodes and arcs from that original series.
Right.
And oh man, I was like, man, did this thing age interestingly, to say the least. But so I jumped in to this one, by the time I had caught up and felt I was ready to join this, was week five. And so I binged the first five episodes and then went, no, I must have more. So I hadn't conditioned myself for the weekly viewing that everyone else who started on episode one kind of had. So that was that was a terrible mistake, that, you know, to sort of jump in at the point where all you want to see is more. But I do honestly think that if anything, this show benefited so much from spreading itself out week to week and allowing that discourse and allowing a week of fans to go, holy shit, can you believe what happened this week? Mm-hmm. If that had all happened in a drop, I don't think a lot of people would have had the chance to catch up and watch it like myself. And I think we would have stopped talking about this 8 weeks ago, which would have been tragic and really unfortunate. I think this show, more than a lot of other shows that take the chance and do weekly instead of these binge drops, this show really benefited from it. And I think we're all as an audience better off having had that chance over the last 8, 9, 10 weeks to discuss all the things that happened, because this is so much more elevated than that 92 to 96 cartoon for kids was. There was the themes and the storytelling, and you know, it's some of the finest Marvel work we've seen in the last 5+ years. And so I was blown away. I was honestly like, oh, I did not expect to enjoy it or to be this good. And I'm very excited to talk about it.
Yeah, I think, again, the week to week, as you mentioned, it helped to create the dialogue and extend the experience. I think if it had dropped at once, like you pointed out, I think people would have, whoa, it's amazing. But the conversation wouldn't have continued, and it wouldn't have been the theories, the excitement, the awe, the huge moments that we got in every episode. So it was really smart, and it really highlights how appointment television is just, it really can change the experience, given that we, as you pointed out, Kevin, we're so surrounded by streaming platforms that will do dumps of all their episodes, which can be beneficial. But again, it stints the conversation. It doesn't keep that dialogue going. And yeah, this week to week experience made the show that much better and excitement for it. So
yeah, think about if all 10 came out. If all 10 came out, we're talking about this finale and that's it. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe those elements from 5 resonate a little and people talk, but not the same way. And you know, and maybe some wicked moments from episode 8, which hopefully I'll get a chance to talk, you know, maybe they would have survived, but they probably wouldn't have survived the bigger overall conversation. It would have been all talking about how this episode ended and what it means for the future. And so yeah, spreading it out was such a good idea to allow all of those moments to breathe and have time to be a focal point that was discussed amongst the audience.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And you know, Nate, you and I were pretty much day one watchers. You know, we did the screeners, and then as soon as more episodes came, we would just watch. And then I know we would have our sort of like weekly debrief, because we didn't have a watch club going. We didn't have any.
Next
season we'll definitely be doing one. But yeah, again, I feel like I know a lot of how you feel about this weekly drop, but please share with us in greater detail. How has this weekly experience been for you?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things, and I know you've said a lot online about that it should be Saturday mornings. I definitely think if we're really going to look to nitpick anything about series, that might
that's
be
it.
The only
yeah,
that might be the only thing. And yeah, I mean, Kevin, you were mentioning the dump of series. You know, I'm thinking of the fantastic TV that we've gotten, the fantastic streaming that we've gotten, with something like Fallout, for instance, and just how incredible that show is when we talk about incredible adaptations. But the fact that we talked about it and now it's gone, and it wasn't, it had so much opportunity to be a weekly thing. I think about even when we look in the realm of animated superheroes, Invincible, and the way that show was sort of spread out in such a weird way. And I know some of it, there was rumors, some of it had to do with Amazon wanting to make sure they had ads running, their ad version running during a portion of the season. And it really killed the conversation on that show. And it's so unfortunate because it is up there. It is peak animated superhero content. But speaking of peak animated superhero content, who knew that we would get peak 90s cartoons in 2024. Who knew that that's you know, we just had to wait a little bit longer. But this show is just, it's perfect. You know, when we talk about the concept of adapting from a source material this is the gold standard. This is how it should be done from now on. And in terms of adapting from here, and where do they go from here with how they write X-Men, how Marvel does X-Men? Oh, honestly,
that's big shoes,
I hope it's huge shoes, but I hope at the very least, I don't want them to take this and live action. I just want them to learn from the way that these characters are written, the way that this dialogue is written in this show, and find a way to give us a more heightened version. I think there's a lot that the live action side of Marvel can learn from this series. And I'm really, really intrigued to see how, if they do manage to bring over the way we felt about this show week to week to some of their other projects.
I honestly think it's a magic that's made for this show specifically. And anything that will come after will definitely not compete, but have to add to it. And I think if anything, the success of this show has probably made Marvel say, like, we can't recreate this live action. We have to do it differently so that this show can be its own unique thing. Mm-hmm. Fans are holding it near and dear to their heart, and that's been so clear over these last 10 weeks or 8 weeks, I guess, because the first week was two episodes. But yeah, you know, kind of a spinning off, I know I was going to kind of refrain from having us kind of bring up our favorite episodes, because I feel like a lot of us are probably going to choose number 5 as being the peak episode of the season. But Kevin, you did make mention that you wanted to talk a little bit about maybe some moments in other episodes, you know, kind of off the cuff. What were those moments? What were some standout moments, obviously, outside of maybe episode 5?
Yeah, like when I was doing my rewatch, a big thing, and again, I don't remember the "to be continued" being so prominent in that original run of the show, but like they had 10 or 15 multiple part storylines that they would often either start or end a season with. And I just thought, you know, they were a little long, they were a little overdone in that original series, but here that 3-part finale was so incredible and just built upon itself, not just from everything we'd experienced in the first 7 episodes, but then one on top of the other for episodes 8, 9, and then the finale. I just thought they did an incredible job. And like, I've never been a big Cyclops guy. Scott Summers is a bit of a wiener.
Cyclops in this show is,
he's a badass in this show. Yeah. And the Summers driving around in that all-terrain vehicle with the Jean Grey bubble. Yeah. Like that was awesome. That was like fist pumping cool for me. That really stood out for sure.
Yeah.
And that moment that you're describing, Kevin, it's one of those things where, you know, we talk about the feeling of nostalgia. I'm not going to lie. I most of the times when I was watching this show, I sat down with a bowl of cereal and made sure that I had a nice bowl of sugary cereal to enjoy alongside the theme to this song or theme to the show. But in terms of that feeling, that's like you're playing with your toys. Like that is that the car is doing these crazy jumps and you smash it down. And but I think as far as like the you know, besides episode 5, because again, I think we could all just talk for a whole podcast on episode 5. I think for me, I really enjoyed what they did with Montendo, Life Death Part 1 and Life Death Part 2. I think Montendo and Life Death Part 1 being a back-to-back thing, it kind of came out of nowhere. It wasn't something I was expecting, and I know they did
very
that.
Invincible.
Yeah, and they did that in the original series as well, and it's a traditional Saturday morning cartoon thing to sometimes do that. And I thought that they did it in such a great way that didn't feel like they were really taking away from one story or the other. Of course, video game stuff and the unbelievable cameo that they had with the original voice actress for Jubilee, who I'm blanking right now.
Allison Court.
Who is also Lunette the Clown. But hearing her voice in that episode was so cool. And of course, everything with video games. But I think even more so with Life Death Part 2, chills. Like seeing Storm overcoming her sense of fear, her dread, the way they used her claustrophobia, which I remember when we talked about this show for our review, and I talked about how cheesy some of the original episodes were and how corny they were and how silly it was that they, you know, it was amazing that they were able to bring in a theme like claustrophobia, like her origin story of having her you know, her home attacked and the wall falling in on her. Very cool. But then when you immediately follow that up with the sewer people, I can't remember what they're called, but they, you know, having a lightsaber fight and they're not allowed to use their powers. It's just, it becomes one of those things where it's just, you know, I appreciate the fact they're able to bring some elements of that cheese to this this version of these stories. But that moment, and we watched it together, Meg, that moment, and it was just, it's chilling. It's absolutely phenomenal when she gets her powers back. And I thought was another highlight in this phenomenal season.
Yeah, for me, I think the character growth and the storyline of Rogue was one of my favorite parts of the show. Specifically in, I obviously we watch her go through what she goes through in episode 5, but then the reverb of that in the next 2 episodes of her like anger, and she just doesn't really give a crap about anything anymore. She just wants vengeance. It's really wild to see. And I think it's in episode 7, Bright Eyes, when she like, I'm not great with character names, but Trask, is that his name?
She kills Trask.
When she kills him was like a my heart stopped moment. Mm-hmm. And just, yeah, throughout the entire series, season, I guess I should say, because I don't know what she's like in the original. I just really love her character development and growth, and the ups and downs that she goes through are very interesting to see her handle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm with you guys. I think that Kevin, like, as you said, this 3-part finale was such a great way to wrap up what was already such a well thought out season for those first 7 episodes leading into 8, 9, and 10. You know, as you were talking about, Meg, like the character growth that we get throughout each of those episodes for each of our characters. Some get, you know, pushed to the back. I know a lot of people, you know, they love Wolverine, and you know, but you know, Bo DiMaio, the writer, said he put that on the side and he wanted to write stories about the X-Men. And we got that. We got stories about Cyclops, who was a dweeb to Kevin. Rogue, who would have been very, you know, Southern Belle, so, you know, very, you know, tough and whatnot. Her character was sort of a one note in the original series. Storm, you know, she had development and, you know, a great sense of leadership in the original, but her character is obviously fleshed out so much more here, and understanding her demons in relationship to, you know, her abilities and kind of unlocking that. And it was just, it was all what really well done. And even Jubilee and Roberto, you know, the new character that we got, and seeing their relationship and sort of, you know, how Jubilee is now the mentor to Roberto, and given the fact that when we met Jubilee in episode 1 of season 1 of X-Men, you know, she was the newbie that was being shown around. So there was just a great sense of like repetition and bringing that element over. But every character really got some time and some moments, even with Wolverine kind of being pushed to the back, and then suddenly in episode 9 really coming through in more ways than one. You know, I feel like, you know, this the series was so well developed on focusing on the characters, their relationships with one another, whether they're familial, whether they're romantic, and what that looks like, and also just even understanding the relationship between humans and mutants, that political satire, that political commentary that exists there. So, you know, shout out to the writing, because I think that's what's really to be celebrated. And I think that inspired so much and got the visuals going. And there's such a beautiful, like we talk about it all the time with animation. It's like you can have, you know, good animation, but you might not have a great story, or you might have a great story and not really good animation. I think this is like an excellent example of the marriage of the two and how they really do complement one another. So I know I asked for highlights from your favorite or episodes, but I'm just going to go and say the entire season. Right.
Sure, and you mentioned it there. I think a lot of it has to do with the writing. And, you know, we could talk about story beats that were incredible, dialogue that was really well done. I just think one of the biggest challenges must have been taking a show that's almost 30 years old, and it's literally meant to take place right after the original run ended, but it has been 28 years for its audiences. And so finding that balance of, like, making it feel familiar, but also adapting it to the times was incredible. And I think certain characters really benefited from just slight tweaks. Like Wolverine, you don't have to do anything to. People know he's cool. He's a badass in the show. I didn't notice much change from the 90s version to this version. But like a character like Gambit always felt very secondary to me almost.
Yeah,
he was very
Rogue.
Much
yeah.
an ancillary character.
Yeah.
And here he's really brought to the forefront. His personality's tweaked just enough that he feels not like a new character, but like he's got this new lease on life. And like I was so engaged by him over those first five episodes. I thought he was terrific and like, you know, one of the great, you know, going out moments of all time, like one of the coolest on-screen deaths I've ever seen in my life. And then really quickly, like Beast, I had no idea as a kid that this character was as funny as he is. and like this very version of Beast reminded me more of Fraser Crane than Kelsey Grammer's Beast in the sure. 2000s X-Men movies. But like Beast might be my favorite fun character from this run. He was loved every one of his ridiculous little one-liners. But again, just he was a bit, if they had the exact same style of dialogue that Beast used in that the original run, it wouldn't have worked as well. They tweaked it just enough that he came off knowing that he was dropping these one-liners, and they were zingers. He was great. So yeah, like I just thought it was really cool how some of those secondary characters from the original run became like, you know, had these big moments throughout this season where it was like, oh fuck, they're cool too, man. It's not just about Wolverine and Magneto and
exactly
and
about the popular ones. It was about all of them. It was about every single one of them mattering and adding to the story, and they each had their own story to tell, and it mattered to the bigger story.
Well, also shout out to the Trojan horse moment in this finale.
Yeah.
It was so good. But also, you know, shout out to Morph. I think they,
yes.
speaking of characters that you make a tweak to based on the audience that has grown up now and has gotten to a place where Morph can mean so much more to so many more people in this show that already, you know, kind of helps a lot of people in so many different minorities and so many different groups. And I think it's super cool the way that they were able to treat them as so much more than just a cameo machine.
Mm-hmm.
Because don't get me wrong, some of the when we get Morph Smash, I was I was freaking out a little bit.
Yeah.
But no, I think the way that they sort of show them, and even in this finale, and kind of confirming some of the speculation we had, you know, earlier on in the season of, yeah, Morph's got a big old crush on Wolverine.
Yeah, that was really
and it's
purposeful,
it's
moment, right?
Really purposeful and so beautiful at the same time. I mean, kind of getting both the Scott admitting to himself, sort of saying the quiet part out loud of you know, don't let her down.
Yeah,
don't
let her down.
He knows that Jean feels something for Wolverine. And then to kind of get that 1-2 punch with Morph also then becoming Jean and realizing that I can't be with Wolverine, but I know the one person that would get through to him in this moment to keep him alive. And it's just heartbreaking, but also so lovely at the same time. And it's just this concept of, and it's going to sound so cheesy, I'm sorry, but it's the concept of love and familial love and how well this show is able to pull that off in ways where, yeah, there's, you know, we talk about the show being super horny at times and there's definitely, you know, hookups that are happening. But for the most part, this X-Men team, they are a family.
Mm-hmm.
And we get to see those versions of love represented wholeheartedly in all of these characters. And it's beautiful.
Yeah, and I think it really does go back to what Bo said about wanting to write a show about the X-Men, right? And not about popular characters, but to have them all be important and to let them all have moments and let them all have their own stories that maybe get resolved or not resolved, or, you know, there's more layers to it that needs to be unraveled. So, you know, again, I think a huge shout out to the writing. I think it's safe to say, though, for all of us, because we're not going to give a score, I think it's safe to say we're all 5 out of 5 on this series.
I'm not a 5 out of 5, actually.
Yeah. Oh, aren't
I'm a
okay.
10 out of 5.
Oh,
sure. I'm an X out of 5. Let's go.
And even I can confidently confirm that the other mutant geek that is not here, Darcy Hudson, he is also a 5 out of 5 on the show. Oh, yeah. So, you know, it's been great stuff. Now let's start talking about this finale, because we've been 24 minutes in just talking about the entire show. So we'll hopefully move it at a fast pace, because we've talked a little bit more about some of the stuff. So, you know, initial impressions of this finale in relation to those episodes, like, how did you guys feel at the end of this episode? Did you feel resolved? Are there things that, you know, moved too quickly for you? Meg, let's start with you.
Yeah, I will say that some other episodes had more of an impact on me than this one. Now, that may be because I don't know a lot about the previous show. There's storylines and characters that are shown in this episode that maybe they are a huge impact, shock value character at the end of a finale, but I don't know who they are. Right. So it's cool to see the concept of time used, as we're, you know, the multiverse was introduced to us 3 years ago, 4 years ago, whatever that was, five. Oh my God, I have no concept of time. but I like the way that they're using the multiverse now. I think Marvel made a little bit of a mistake with the shock value of the multiverse, and Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness was like too much, but they're figuring out how to use it within time rather than it being like, I don't know, this crazy web. Now it's like a streamline that we have to find people in different aspects of time, I guess. I think that's cool.
Yeah, well, it's always been important to the X-Men animated series. So to see it again coming back into sort of the fold of the story is very fitting. And to your point, it may connotate a multiversal quality, because it definitely is. It's time travel. But I think rather than it being another universe, it is of the same sort of timeline.
Sure.
So that's why the time travel aspect of, you know, Cable and Nathan, that matters so much. Bishop, Forge, all of these characters that they've been talking about, we'll see more hopefully in season two. Well, based on the way this one ends, it's a guarantee. So yeah, it's definitely great to see those elements start to kind of come into play, and they've been very much hinting at it throughout and the season. Nate,
I think this finale, it just did such a good job of balancing so many spinning plates on the table, and it did a good job of spending the right amount of time with the right amount of characters in the right amount of places. And I think for me, like, I loved the fact that we kind of, Magneto and Xavier were kind of pulled out from the action in this episode, and really getting to see, I just loved sort of, especially the way the episode opens, we get to sort of see, okay, this is where they started, literally where they started, and it, how it instantly is brought into where they are now, was just so, so impressive. And again, we talk about that concept of love, and seeing just how much these two guys just absolutely love each other was beautiful. And I think it's just like, they really are brothers at the end of the day. And it's, yeah, I thought it was a great start for the episode. And I think it's a great way to, again, to, as part of that balancing process is concerned, you can't, you know, maybe that would have been just one too many, or two many characters to have to kind of cut between. So by pulling them out of the situation was really, really smart, and such a great concept.
Yeah, it isolates their story for the moment, and gives more, you know, pause and reflection on what their conflict, you know, all the conflict that they've had over the many episodes, but specifically obviously within this season one, and coming to this sort of realization of where it all began, and to see that sort of unfold, and to, as you said, Nate, to see that familial brotherhood bond between them, it was a really great way to highlight the strong relationship that these two characters have as being sort of a yin and a yang, and having opposite of opinions on how mutant and human coexistence should or would look like in the greater world. Kevin, how about for yourself?
I think there was so much going on in the season and in the, you know, these three episodes in particular, that like you could probably nitpick a few things. Like, did they let Magneto and Xavier off the hook? I mean, all of this is their fault. if you really go back and look at the decisions they made. But I mean, at the end of the day, they do kind of save the day as well. And it's obviously leading, I think, obviously leading to a combination of them going forward. I don't think Apocalypse is going to be our only baddie in season two. I think we are going to see a little onslaught. But I mean, like, it was a really tough job that they had there. They kind of had three central villains going on in that final episode with Magneto, Mr. Sinister, and then obviously Bastion.
Yeah.
And like, Sinister just gets like tossed aside pretty quickly there. You know,
I like how he runs away. He's like, oh, I'm ugly now. Well, yeah. Don't look at me.
Don't look at me. Yeah. But I mean, like, if you've been a fan since 92, like, ah, good. Fuck off, Sinister. You know, you have been a nuisance for far too long. So I was okay with them sort of sweeping him aside because he wasn't the bigger story. There was so much more going on. So yeah, I think if anything, they really handled how much they have going on. And I think, you know, like you mentioned, Justin, time travel is such a staple of this series dating all the way back. But I think it's going to be neat. It looks like we're going to be sort of dealing with three different time periods simultaneously, which they've never really done. We've gone to the future, we've gone to the past, but we've never sort of done all of that at the same time. And so they did a great job of resolving most of the issues that we got in this season, but setting the table for the next two seasons to such a crazy degree. Like, to think that, like, they somehow made the issues and the events of this season seem small by the end of the season based on what we're dealing with next. And I think that is kind of very much what that original series did. It was like, oh, you thought that was a big storyline, here's a five-parter. And so it's, if anything, it got me so excited to see what's next, you know, like, while not moving too far from what has already happened, there's lessons that were learned by our characters, and those are going to influence their decisions as we go forward. So that kind of storytelling is really impressive, actually, when you look at the scale that they've sort of tried to tackle.
Yeah, I agree with you that there was a lot to handle in this final episode. We had Bastion, we had Mr. Sinister, you know, Magneto and his events with Wolverine. You know, there was a lot that this final episode had to kind of give closure. So it was interesting, as you said, Nate, it was smart to probably pull out Magneto and Xavier, focus on them as a sort of a yin and yang story, their brotherhood, their relationship, focus on them. And as Kevin said, we'll talk about where we're going and Onslaught and stuff like that. But that helps to establish that for future events. But the stuff that happened outside of Xavier and Magneto's story was really compelling and really interesting. It did seem to like really quickly move through, like you said, Sinister. Like, everything happened that everyone was anticipating. Phoenix came back, right? Sinister was, you know, pushed to the side. He's obviously not dead, which is great. So that's good. But, you know, I'm kind of confused about maybe what happened with Bastion. I think he might be gone altogether. He could be coming back. But I'm excited to see, you know, they moved through that pretty quickly, but then that way they could resolve it and move forward. I said on Twitter, it's like, it was a balance between closure and anticipation. That's what this episode did really, really, really well, is it closed out what it needed to, gave characters the some great moments. The moment with Rogue, when she repeats the same lines and punches Bastion in the face, is like burned in my head just as much as Remy saying, remember it, before he got blown to bits or not bits, but killed for sure. And yeah, the anticipation of what's next is always the excitement with these big MCU shows. And I'm glad that they didn't dull it down for the animation. They treated it with the same sort of, you know, excitement and hype, and gave us a little end teaser there that really does introduce a lot of great, great ideas for where we're going in season two and three.
Well, they moved through it quickly, but I think even the quicker moments felt like they were resolving some incredible arcs over the course of this season. I think of, you know, Nathan finally calling Jean his mom, and that's what brings out the Phoenix Force, is fantastic. It's beautiful. I think the moment with as you mentioned, with Rogue and kind of getting out some of that aggression on the right exact person to do that to. And then I also like Scott and the fact that he has been struggling this entire season with how do I lead? How am I, you know, am I the leader? You know, you were Xavier is supposed to be the leader. Mm-hmm. I'm not the leader. And now he literally does exactly what Xavier would do in that moment. They're all broken. They're all battered. But they are still in a position to land a final blow. And he just says, no, that's not what a leader does. That's not what Xavier would want. And he extends a hand. Now, unfortunately, it doesn't seem like that was able to save Bastion, unfortunately, or maybe fortunately. But it will be interesting to sort of see. Also, can I just shout out the actor that plays Bastion? I was looking for his
name. Theo James?
Yeah, Theo James. He just did such a phenomenal job with the voice work, but the only thing I will say, and it's a compliment, I promise, but we've been watching, obviously we just wrapped our watch club for the Bad Batch, and Jimmy Simpson in that show as Hemlock, I could not stop hearing like Hemlock's voice through Bastion. It just sounded so similar and so sinister, for lack of a better term. Obviously not sinister, but no, I thought that the way that they were able to clean up and wrap up some of these arcs to then make way, as you said, for what's next, was fantastic.
Yeah,
really impressive.
Yeah. Now we are going to talk about what's next, but before we do, let's talk about the immense amount of Easter eggs.
Hear a word from our sponsor. One day.
Before we talk about what's next, I would love to talk about the Easter eggs, or the cameos, if you will, from this episode. It was pretty nuts.
Hold on, I've got the whole list here. Let me read it.
We've had hints, obviously, throughout the entire season that, you know, the bigger Marvel universe exists within this X-Men 97. Now, that wasn't the case back in the day. They definitely hinted at characters and you know what they had rights to, like Spider-Man and Fox were obviously they were able to cross over, but you know they had a Hulk character, but they didn't call him the Hulk. They called him Green Man Neanderthal or something like that. They had something weird for it. It was just in a danger room scene with Juggernaut or something.
Green
like
copyright
that.
Free guy. Yeah.
Right. So there yeah. there wasn't this coexistence of the Marvel characters within. You got Captain America in one episode as well with Wolverine and his history. So there was a little bit of it sprinkled in, but here, like, you know, throughout, we got Doctor Doom, we got Zemo, we had references to the Hulk, we saw the Hulk, you know, is and Morph. We, in this last episode, we got Iron Man and Captain America. We also had Captain America just have a great moment with Rogue, which was fantastic. And then we got Spider-Man twice in costume and out of costume, confirming that the Peter Parker from the 90s cartoon exists in this 97 world and is found MJ, apparently. That's incredible, which is unusual because that's where the series finale for Spider-Man ended, was him going to find MJ. And then outside of that, we had like what? We had Black Panther, we had Daredevil, we had Cloak and Dagger. There was just so many characters that we saw. What do you guys think about all these characters just living in this show, just being a part of this show?
Well, I gotta say, like, I think seeing all these cameos, and yeah, you mentioned Daredevil, King T'Chaka, I think the other aspect to it too, though, is I'm happy that they didn't seem to all be cameos for cameo's sake.
No.
Specifically on the boat in that earlier scene, Magneto looks out and we do see Scarlet Witch, we do see Quicksilver, and then I saw someone online pointed out that there's also Polaris,
yeah,
who is also his daughter, and so Rogue is there as well. So those are all the people that he cares for, he loves, and needs to be reminded of in that moment. But it was really just a phenomenal reminder to be like, oh yeah, he's got kids, right? And then I think the other thing that I wanted to mention, and this one was more of a cameo for cameo's sake, but the members of Alpha Flight showed up.
Yeah.
And I was thinking to myself, I'm like, oh, I'd love to see a Daredevil series done in this style. I'd love to, like you were saying, Justin, like I'm one of those fans, like, oh, an Iron Man, a Captain America, oh yeah, they should do a whole series. Like, and then as soon as I saw Puck, I was like, no, let's Alpha Flight right now, please. Can we get an Alpha Flight 90s X-Men animated series? Whatever you want to do. But I think to that point, I also don't mind the idea, and you talked about this with me, Justin, is like the concept of these characters and getting stories of these characters through future seasons where maybe they can be a little more predominant. I mean, the X-Men are gone, you know, as far as the core team that we have, they're in different parts of the timeline. So, you know, let's fill in the gaps, right? And I think that would be fantastic.
Yeah. How about for you guys? Would you like to see, because again, as Nate was mentioning, it's just like so many fans are like, oh, I'd love to see the Spider-Man show return. But like, let's be real, like they have a new Spider-Man show that is supposed to be coming out. It's an animated show that's going to be coming out, I think, next year, maybe at the end of this year. There hasn't been any confirmation about it. But like, would it make sense to bring back this 90s version Spider-Man or not just have him exist in this show?
What's the biggest problem with the MCU over the last 5 years? Oversaturation, doing too much, yada, 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 yada. I don't think you need 8 new animated shows, but I think this show found the perfect way that I think cameos are the best way to do it. I don't think we need entire series dedicated to these characters necessarily, especially ones that we do have live action representatives for. It's fun to see them in cartoon form, especially when they're throwbacks to, you know, old cartoons that were on around the same time and whatnot. But no, I think Nate, you kind of nailed it on the head there, like with the X-Men not in the present, that is a perfect time to, during that storyline, because like what's Logan up to on Forge's wall? It said he's MIA or whatever, right? But where is he? Because he wasn't zapped off into one of the so if Wolverine's there kind of working with the current day, his current day Avengers and particular certain characters, like that's the way to do it, I think. And that's how you get the most out of it while keeping the idea fresh and not overdoing it. Don't MCU the cartoon world as well, guys. Please, Marvel, I beg of you.
I think given the fact that we're going to see time travel and timelines become so important in season two, it does make sense for us to see whatever's left of the X-Men working with whatever heroes are available to, you know, stop Apocalypse or whatever's happening in the main timeline, while we get these other stories of other timelines where, you know, we're following our other characters. I know, Meg, you were probably, I think you were hinting at it before too, like all the different characters that you saw throughout and like, do they really matter? And you know, it seems like in some instances, obviously they may matter, like Captain America obviously mattered in that episode. But it does seem like these characters were leveraged in a lot of ways to build out the world. Did that help for you in sort of like understanding a little bit more of the world?
I mean, definitely some of them, the ones that I did recognize, I was like, that's so cool that they can just be thrown in here because of course they exist in some capacity. One of the bonuses that we get with the multiverse being introduced is the fact that like these don't have to be the same Captain America, the same exactly. Iron Man, the same yeah. Daredevil that we know from the live actions. They could be totally different, and that's great. So there is no, it's almost like you don't need to be consistent because it could be from any version of Earth.
Mm-hmm.
I did find it really interesting, like Nate said, when Scarlet Witch was on that boat that Magneto was looking out at, and then on the final poster board of all off of world. The
yeah.
yeah, she's just off world. So I was like, okay, I'm gonna be paying attention to that one because she's obviously my favorite Marvel character of all time. But it was the final people that we were introduced to in these two new points in time that I'm assuming means something. Obviously, I know who Nathan is, but the Egyptian era I thought was really intriguing. And obviously, my brain goes to Moon Knight, but I know it's not the same guy. So, like, what does it mean? Maybe were these people shown in Moon Knight? Nate's
yeah.
smiling.
We'll get to we'll definitely. I think we can elaborate on that when we get to what's next,
sure.
for sure. But I think Nate, you had something that you wanted to mention in regards to cameos.
Oh, I just, in terms of, I think, you know, it kind of goes into what's next, I guess. But it's like the next X-Men team, like, is it, you know, Bobby Drake? Are we getting Colossus? Are we getting,
yes,
you know, Emma Frost? I think there were some other names that were up there that I didn't recognize. But I know Shadowcat is a really big mm-hmm. one. And, you know, I think it's just, again, it's one of those things where we saw how the live action X-Men teams brought in different X-Men at different points in time throughout the multiple you know, series of those films. So I think it'd be really, really cool to not just get cameo characters, you know, side storylines, but also to get like, okay, we've got new cast members here as main characters that we get to sort of see an arc for. And again, I think they can, if that means that we have to push aside some of these other characters, we just got a phenomenal season of pretty much growth for pretty much all of these characters. So I'm okay with that. I'm okay mm-hmm. with them, you know, pushing a couple of these characters aside and maybe then giving a triumphant return to another arc for them in a season three.
Mm-hmm. Well, and one thing I agree with is the fact that Wolverine wasn't a main spotlight storyline in the show, because we've gotten a lot of Wolverine everything in mm-hmm. our lifetime for sure. So I think it's more interesting to go into a new season with new characters that we can learn new things about, or characters that we only know from comics. Like
yeah.
maybe it is somebody that I've never seen before, but then they grow to be one of my favorites. That would be such a cool thing to have happen. And this show is a great avenue to do that in.
Yes, absolutely. Well, using what you were talking about there, Nate, as a jumping off point, let's talk about what's next. And I think you're definitely on the right track there with saying that I think we'll see a new band of X-Men, because the main core team is obviously dispersed in different timelines. I was under the impression that Wolverine is either in one of the two, or maybe he's in a third timeline.
Or maybe he's in both.
Maybe, but he could also, like, I'm wondering if he's in another timeline with Morph, just based on where we last saw the characters before all of the, when Asteroid M is like ripped from time, anyone that's on that at that time has been pulled and has now displaced in a different timeline. Meg, you brought it up, the Egyptian stuff. We know where this is going in the origins of Apocalypse. This is Apocalypse, the first generation. His name, as he said, was En-Sabnur.
En-Sabnur. And it's amazing that, Meg, you brought up Moon Knight, and the only version of Apocalypse we've had since the 90s cartoon is the shitty Oscar Isaac version of Apocalypse. So it's kind of Moon Knight, but not quite.
Absolutely. And what's really interesting, too, is that it seems like, you know, we see Beast, Xavier, Magneto, I believe Rogue as well. They're in Egypt. And then we have Scott and Jean in a whole other timeline. Years and years in the future, by the looks of it, with I believe Nathan, if I'm not mistaken. No, Nathan's not there.
Young Nathan's there.
Yeah, yes, young Nathan.
Is there, yeah.
In young
like 3912 AD, I think.
Yes, yes, yeah. Exactly. And that was pretty wild to see. And you know, it looks like even just for setting that little moment up, they're going to have some sort of like second shot at being parents to a young Nathan, which is kind of exciting.
Yeah, 3960 AD, to push my glasses up at you, Kevin.
Damn.
but no, I think the idea of them getting to raise a young Nathan, and the idea of almost how that could potentially impact some of the stuff that we've already seen in this season,
which
is,
I think,
really
is
cool.
Going to right? happen.
The,
yeah.
Right. The fact that he said, there's like a throwaway line almost where he's like, yeah, the stories of you guys or of my parents or something were, you know, they don't live up to what actually happened or something like that. And so they now have a chance to maybe correct that and actually inform him properly. I think that's really the concept. I mean, right where you kind of we're starting off with, Justin, is like time is going to be a major factor in this next season. And I know it sounded like I was kind of joking about the idea that Wolverine, we could see him in multiple timelines, but we really could with
we
that
could.
Character
yeah,
in particular. Sure. And not only that, but the fact that we saw in Sabanur, Apocalypse, both at the beginning of his journey, and also in present day Genosha during that mid-credits end cut there. And the fact that he lifts up that card the moment that he says the word death, and I'm not a huge person, I'm not too familiar with Apocalypse, but I know that the concept of the four horsemen are a thing. And if you remember, Xavier, we might have already gotten foreshadowing to Gambit being the horseman of death, because Xavier sees a giant dead skull version of Gambit. That could literally be the version of Gambit that we see next in the next season.
Well, especially because in the comics, there is a storyline where Gambit willingly becomes death because he thinks it's going to help whatever Apocalypse's goal is in that particular storyline. But yeah, so they're definitely taking, as they have done throughout this entire series, especially the this version of it, elements from, you know, very successful comic runs over the last 30 years from the X-Men, and are sort of putting their own spin on it.
Yeah, it's I think it's actually primarily in the 90s, the comics that they're referencing. Fatal Attraction is definitely a huge inspiration for this series, given the way the penultimate episode ended with the sort of splash page of Wolverine and the Animantium getting pulled out of him. That is right from the comic books. Even in this episode where Xavier attacks Magneto, again, moments ripped right from the panel. And Beau DeMaio would actually work with the directors to actually storyboard that and you know, have them kind of bring those panels to life in a lot of ways. So there was purpose there. But yeah, like to obviously see, you know, I also think that third timeline, the future timeline that is of Scott and Jean, I think that's, you know, post like Apocalypse is like taken over. So I think we're seeing three different timelines, the present and then his beginning and then his future. And I think what's interesting is how the X-Men are going to be influencing Apocalypse. Like, he's going to, like, given the fact that they're going back to his sort of, like, I guess his birthright of Egypt, you know, it's so many years ago, they're going to influence his character, who is inevitably going to be their villain in present day time, which is wild to sort of see. But Kev, you touched on it. This whole storyline with Magneto and Xavier is definitely another part of that Fatal Attractions, because the events lead to Onslaught. And if you know who Onslaught is, it's the sort of the subconscious of evil that exists in Xavier that consumes him, that comes from Magneto, and it comes from this mind bond that they share. And I think that next season is probably going to be more focused on Apocalypse, with us seeing hints of Onslaught on the horizon, and then boom, season three, we get Onslaught. And I think that would be the best way to seed it out, rather than trying to stuff that in, because at least for myself, I've always wanted to see Onslaught in some sort of capacity other than just the comics, as his character is so cool. And it is derivative of an evil Xavier that has very much consumed parts of Magneto. And that's interesting. And the way that, again, that just adds another layer to this whole separate storyline between the two of them. And again, how warm and how again, Nate, as you said, familial and loving it was, to know that that's going to breed something evil potentially in the future. It's pretty wild, right? So it's pretty wild to see. But yeah, there's a lot that they can explore there.
Totally. And I don't know if we're where we're going next, but I did want to just shout out like some of my favorite lines from this episode. Like, I mean, again, we talk about the dialogue, like, run and hide before someone starts dreaming of camps. Some of these lines, some of the dialogue just takes your breath away at times. And that moment is just something that they weren't able to get away with in the original series, mm-hmm. right? Again, based on who that series, I guess, might have been aimed to, or the restrictions that they had on what they were allowed or not allowed to reference or say in those original episodes. And the fact that that is aligned here, it just brings with it so much weight. Of course, Game Over Sleazoid is another phenomenal moment with Jubilee. But then the other one that I think just really hits from a standpoint of X-Men in general, and the whole sort of concept behind this is a line that Bastion says, where he says, humanity would rather die than have kids like us. And not only is he then recognizing that he himself, you know, is a mutant, something that he obviously hates about himself, but that whole concept around that, you know, we've got missiles being fired in and around that moment from humans to kind of take out this problem. That's what we do best, I guess, as humans, we fire missiles. But that line in itself was just riveting. And again, it's one of those things where, in terms of where do we go going forward, it has been shared, I believe, and I think you told me this, Justin, that Beau DeMaio has written, or that you said that they've already finished recording.
So, as far as I know, they've done the voice recordings for most, if not all, the episodes
of season two.
Wow. And season two has been written, and season three has been plotted, if not necessarily fully fleshed out. So there is, like, a season two has already been sort of greenlit and is ready to go. And you know, I don't know where they are with the animation. I do know that I have heard that it'll probably be a little while before we get it, maybe towards the end of 2025. And you know, Nate, you said it when we were talking offline, you know, that's okay. It gives us a little bit of a space and time, and then boom, it comes swinging back, and you'll get all of that flood of nostalgia all over again, with the show. So yeah, a little breathing space, and we'll have our MCU content, movies and TV shows before we need another batch of X-Men 97.
But I guess for me, in terms of future seasons, it's I take a little bit of it's good to hear that has been the case, at least in terms of the writing for the show, because that's what you said. Like, again, the animation, absolutely gorgeous. You know, this series didn't just come together because of one person. It was a whole team of people, Jake Tesserena, a bunch of different people, directors, and you know, this crew did such a phenomenal job. There are so many elements that can be done without the writing, but the writing is so impactful. And again, I just brought up all that dialogue, those dialogue moments. It'll be interesting to see if that affects something like a season three, because if season two is already in the bag, I'm cool with it. Hopefully we do get a season three. Is there a number of seasons that you'd want this to go for? Because I'm thinking three.
I'm thinking three as well. I think three is enough. And I think then live action can carry over. And then if, at that point, you know, if you want to do your 90s Spider-Man, fine, do a 90s Spider-Man. You want to do a 90s series with the heroes from that universe and so on, sure, you can do it. But there's no need, obviously, as we were talking about before, to have to, like, you know, oversaturate that just because there's a buzz off of the nostalgia of X-Men 97. Let them live and breathe in this series. And then, you know, if you do your three seasons and it's successful, then that's great. But I think you're right. Like, you know, Beau has been removed. He was fired, and we don't really know the ins and outs of as to why, but he's no longer working on the show. But the fact that a season two is already in the bag and is ready to rock and has been, you know, fleshed out and written, that's confidence that Marvel had in the show, and that we'll see that sooner rather than later. But with season three, if they have to bring in a new writer, I think a season four or five would be dictated on the success of that. If it still hits and there's the same sort of impact, then we'll probably see more seasons, and maybe, but I don't think it needs to be anything more than three. I don't think.
No, you're going to deal with the big bad next season in terms of, like, the X-Men's biggest, most notable foe in Apocalypse. And then if you do build throughout that season to Onslaught, and their last great challenge is, you know,
Xavier,
taking down Xavier. I mean, that's the perfect note. You can't go get a higher note than that. I think that's the perfect way to close off this 30 plus year sort of story. That's the way to do it. So yeah, give me three and call it, end on a high note.
And how poetic is it that, you know, Magneto is the sort of the at least one of the main big bads in this first season, right? To then end the series with it being Xavier. It's just,
yeah,
it's the beginning of this episode, but in, you know, a whole three season arc.
And it's funny, and I know we're getting towards the end here, and I don't want to obviously instigate more conversation, but, you know, everyone talks about the idea of Magneto as the villain. And yes, he is the titular villain of the X-Men franchise, but it's so funny to see his story told in the season where you actually do go by the phrase, Magneto is right. Like you as a moral, as an audience member, kind of align with it. Maybe it's extreme, maybe it's too far, but at the same time, it's like he's not wrong.
You see his point of view.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He's not wrong in how he thinks and knows humans would treat mutants and what they want to do. And I think that is more of the pause. These other elements like Bastion and Sinister and what they're doing, they definitely were pitted as sort of the main villains. And I think we were meant to kind of look at Magneto differently as rather than just the villain, but like understand his maybe where he comes from, especially in this episode where we see that the conversation between Xavier and himself. So, again, like we said, the writing has been fantastic. The show has been fantastic. We cannot wait for a season two. Any final thoughts before I close this? Anything else? Anything that hasn't been talked about? No?
I just want to say I don't think this needs to be the last animation thing that Marvel does. And I know it definitely won't be, but
for sure.
I think, you know, not saying we need to oversaturate animation, but I don't think it's been touched in so long that it's really great that we're getting animated stuff.
For sure. And for clarity, I'm all for more animated projects. I think the thing is you don't need to do a bunch of 90 style versions of these heroes. Do something else with the animation. You know what I mean? Nate, you've always said it. Bring an animated project to the theaters. Make it a movie.
Yeah.
Give it that sort of prestige of being as a theater experience.
Maybe we get an animated Infinity Pause. I don't know if you've seen Infinity Pause with all the animals of the MCU. Let's get maybe little shorts
I'm
or something.
In.
Come on. Let's go.
I wouldn't put past Marvel to do something cutesy for. But that's a definite, that's direct to
It'd
Disney
be for
Plus.
Kids.
Yeah, it's direct to Disney Plus. They're 5-minute episodes. That's all it is.
Be cute. Pizza dog.
But I think we're looking more at not necessarily for adults, but animation sort of geared, to a bit of an older audience.
Yes.
I think DC has sort of dominated that sort of space
world.
For
yes.
so long
yeah.
that to see this come from Marvel when you compare it to the other sort of any, be it computer or hand-drawn animated stuff that we've gotten from Marvel, this was just such a fresh take on this that they can definitely do more. And I think don't necessarily copy this, but use it as inspiration for what kind of stories can be told in an animated format for older audiences. I think that this should be the benchmark for that.
It's knowing your audience, right? It's knowing your audience. And I think that that's what this show did really, really well. It knew that the audience that grew up watching the show were going to come back and show it, and it needed to mature itself for that audience. And that's what it does, right? So again, the marriage between writing and the art of animation, it's so prevalent in this series, which is why I loved it. And I think, we all really, really enjoyed it. Well, that is it for our spoiler-filled discussion of Marvel Animation's X-Men 97. Went a little long, but that's okay. There's four of us, so we all got to talk a lot about what we loved about this show. And if you love this episode, well, feel free to subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you want to write into the show and let us know your thoughts on this episode or what you thought of the season of X-Men 97, well, you can do so at wearegeekcentric@gmail.com. That's wearegeekcentric@gmail.com. Or, hey, if you want to attack us on Twitter, you can do so. Or X, it's geekcentricyt. Let us know your thoughts. And if you want to hit us up on Instagram, you can do so at wearegeekcentric. Keep in mind, we have a ton of great episodes out now, X-Men 97-centric, especially. We got interviews with Lenore Zahn, voice of Rogue, George Bauza, the voice of Beast, and Jake Casareta, the supervising director of X-Men 97. And we will have interviews with the two directors from this entire series, because believe it or not, guys, there's only two directors that directed all 10 of these episodes. They divided it up between the two of them. So that interview will be coming out maybe towards the end of this week, depending on how quickly the post work does. If not, you'll have it for Monday morning. And here in Canada, it's a long weekend, a holiday. So, you know, if you're doing nothing and you want to listen to some X-Men 97 stuff, we got you covered. But that is it for this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. I would love to thank my lovely mutants, my mutant geeks, Meg, Nate, Kevin. Thank you so much for joining me for this spoiler-filled discussion. We did it. We did it.
Yeah, and bub.
Oh, yeah.
And as we say,
love ya.
Bye.
Get home safe, mutants.
Peace.